A long-embraced foundation of education has been the access to as many ideas and cultures as possible so that a full opportunity to learn can result. As we've seen, many parents and politicians seem to have a problem with that, don't they? While procedures and opportunities have always been made available to voice objections and hold discussions, that's not good enough for some. Only elimination of what they object to will satisfy them. So how widespread has this become in America's schools? What is the possible impact on students from all this? Here to share the findings of the report, Educational Intimidation, How Parents' Rights Legislation Undermines the Freedom to Learn, from PEN America, is their research director, James Tager. How are you today, James?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Got two websites for you. They are on the homepage, PEN.org, and the report directly is at PEN.org/report/educational-intimidation. But you can go to our website after the discussion and peruse the report yourself. What was the goal with the report, Educational Intimidation, James?
Yeah, so our organization has been focused on documenting and pushing back against for years what we're calling the Ed Scare, which is this sort of hysteria of the idea that dangerous ideologies and sexualized content is pervading our schools and libraries. And we saw a lot of this starting in late 2020 and 2021 with the proposal of a lot of, quote, anti-critical race theory bills, end quote, which is the idea that dangerous un-American ideologies were being taught in our schools, and we saw bill after bill proposed, and some of these became laws to actually outlaw specific ideas or perspectives from being introduced in schools. And this was and remains very dangerous because we're basically watering down children's education and sometimes blocking access to specific content because it makes some legislators personally uncomfortable. But what we saw and what we wanted to document in this specific report is we've seen a pivot from a lot of these legislators, from a lot of these activists who are attempting to oppose sort of new ideological restrictions on our schools and libraries. What we saw is an attempt to supplement specific prohibitions against specific viewpoints with more indirect prohibitions, bills that seemed kind of more neutral on their face, but that were designed to spur self-censorship by making certain forms of instruction more burdensome or costly or risky. The idea being that it would sort of spook teachers and principals into looking at potentially controversial material that they include in their instruction. You know, things such as race and racism in American history, or how we teach on issues of sort of that involve sexuality or LGBTQ content, and that they would say to themselves, oh, man, under these new laws, this is kind of particularly risky for me to teach. It empowers parents or sometimes even just random community members to cause problems for me, to cause problems for the school. I could potentially lose my job. So why don't I just remove it? Isn't that just a safer way to approach this? And so the end result is we see these bills that seem more neutral, but that risk watering down our children's education in lieu of not exposing them to quote-unquote controversial content.
You look at a map of what James defines as educational intimidation bills. States who are not either implementing or proposing these laws are as follows: Vermont, New York, New Mexico, Nevada. That's it. That's quite a spread, James.
Yeah, this is a national level issue. And we have to call a spade a spade. These bills are being overwhelmingly proposed by Republican legislators in sort of response to and in tandem to this sort of Ed Scare that we've seen from activists who are charging that our schools have become these sites of dangerous sexualization and subversion, right? It's a narrative that exists more as fever dream than as fact, but it's something that legislators are responding to. They see that it makes politically good sense for them personally to be seen as a leader on this issue. And they are proposing to kind of water down the teaching of things that personally make them uncomfortable. And in our report, we give examples. We have a legislator who said, hey, I learned that there was a school that taught about race and racism in a way that I personally am uncomfortable with. So I think we should change the laws of the state to better address this. And so there's something that's not being said, but that's just under the surface, which is all these proposals to do things like enhance obscenity laws or create new pick and choose approaches to education, or to give more monitoring to teacher inspection or to classrooms. These things may sound neutral, and sometimes they even sound like good ideas. I mean, who objects to transparency? Who objects to parental rights? But the way these bills are being written and rolled out, it's actually intended for an ideological purpose. And the ideological purpose is to make it riskier to teach things that certain conservative legislators are personally uncomfortable with.
How much legal precedent or legal decisions, no matter what level the court is at, from the Supreme Court all the way down through the through that chain, how much of those, how much legal action has empowered this movement?
Well, obviously debates over kids' education didn't start in 2020. And in fact, it's really important to note that there's actually legislation that guarantees parental rights in education. The Federal Protection of Pupil Rights Amendment was introduced in 1978 and already gives parents rights, such as the right to consent prior to their child taking a survey regarding protected topics like religious belief. So there are already protections for the parents' role in the education of their child. No one's saying that parents don't have a major role to play in the education of their child. But this is an attempt to impose ideologically motivated constraints on schools that kind of outstrips previous efforts to kind of balance between parental rights and the role of the education system. We are going to see these things being litigated. We can definitely anticipate this. But on some level, the pivot to focus on educational intimidation, to pivot to indirect forms of censorship over more direct forms of censorship, probably has to do with the idea of legislators and their allies saying, oh, if we make this sound more neutral, if we take one step back and make it more indirect of a means of controlling what educators teach, it will be more successful in surviving a constitutional challenge than the previous wave of educational gag orders that we've seen. And the term educational gag orders, what I'm referring to is all these quote-unquote anti-critical race theory bills. Those were bills that said on their face, hey, we're going to make it illegal to teach even about this perspective, right? That raises a pretty clear question about the First Amendment, because you're literally blocking specific perspectives from being introduced into the classroom. And so one of the reasons why we've seen legislators shift to more indirect forms of control over the classroom curriculum and over school libraries is presumably to survive legal challenges.
Darwin James Tager, research director with PEN America, about the findings in the report, Educational Intimidation, How Parents' Rights Legislation Undermines the Freedom to Learn, PEN.org, the website. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. We've linked directly to the report as well at our homepage, so you can study more about what is, as we've looked statistically, is a drastically growing issue with the matter of, you know, you look at the topics too. It seems like elimination versus cooperation and a mutual understanding seems to be the way that the people who were proponents of this idea want to operate. If you just look at the number of anti-LGBTQ plus provisions introduced per year, that number, this is a percentage of all educational intimidation bills introduced that year, that number went from 14% in 2021 to 45% in 2023. And that's as the overall intimidation bill introduction numbers increased year by year in that span as well. And you look at the focus of the topics of these intimidation bills, sounds like a proving ground, a developing ground that, with the lack of understanding of other races, other genders, other sexual orientations, sounds like a lot of hate can grow out of this through ignorance.
I agree. I mean, a lot of these bills appear to basically try to transform schools into unsafe spaces for gay or trans kids. And that's dangerous, right? These bills are often touted out as trying to sort of protect kids from dangerous ideologies, but a bill that makes an LGBTQ kid feel more unsafe at school or in their local library, it's obvious what the harms of that are. And so, you know, these are not bills that we should take lying down. These are not bills where we can say, well, gee, how bad is it really? Because the consequences will be borne out by our kids. Many of these bills that specifically target LGBTQ expression will obviously have major effects on LGBTQ children. And of course, even the bills that don't, what they're doing is watering down children's education. And so, you know, if we believe in the importance of a good education for kids, we need to make sure that it's not subject to undue ideological influence that is attempting to essentially oppose the preferences of one set of legislators on entire school systems in the name of empowering parents. A lot of these bills are supposedly about empowering parents, but really they empower one set of loud, ideologically driven parents over the preferences of the parental body at large. And so, you know, these bills really are a problem. They need to be pushed back against, and legislators need to understand that that citizens, including parents, including kids, see this as dangerous.
It is a fascinating report, a lengthy report, too, that you can find over at penamerica.org. This isn't an understatement on my part, I don't believe, having read it. This is a wake-up call because the results of the demands of the few will have a very negative impact of not just in the here and now, but in the future, will have a negative impact on the many who have a great opportunity for education, a great opportunity when we think about this. These ideas are endangering the appreciation and even the expectation of diversity, as opposed to opening doors. It's closing doors within someone's mind and even their heart. Read it for yourself at penn.org. We've linked directly to the report as well at our homepage, but visit penn.org because they have a wealth of information about ideas related to this in addition to this. But this report, Educational Intimidation, How Parents' Rights Legislation Undermines the Freedom to Learn, sounds like great ideas like James has been talking about, but much like we've talked about here on the show, the title of a piece of legislation can have nothing to do with the mechanics of the legislation presented within it. The hope is that you just won't read the details and react to them in a way that others prefer you do not react to them. But this is something that demands reaction, demands action, demands understanding, and that's what the work of Penn America is doing with this report and their other work. James Tager, Research Director for Penn America, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.